And I just have a couple of slides here, so I want to spend most of the time actually giving you a chance to take a look at it and to use it. So we'll do a little bit on the origins of Big Blue Button. Where did it come from? We'll take a quick look at its components and its features. Installation from the BSD perspective. We'll then have a demo of its use, and if you can attach, you can try it out as well. And then I always like to have people know how they can help. So if we take a look at the origins, Big Blue Button actually came out of Carleton University in Ottawa, which was my former employer, and the Educational Development Center there was looking to extend their distance education. And they needed software to do that. They did have proprietary software, which was costing them about $3,000 a month to use, and which did not provide them all the features they needed. So they needed to be able to basically have online classrooms, and you would be able to record your lectures so students could go back in and catch a lecture that they missed. The department I was working in, the systems and computer engineering, that department head is very open source savvy. He knew there were open source components out there that could provide a solution. The problem was there really wasn't a fully integrated solution. So what they needed was the glue to put it together to have something that just worked out of the box. What that department head did is he got some funding. In Ontario, we have something called the Ministry of Research and Innovation, and they gave development funds to go in and make that solution. And it was originally called the TFN 100, and that was back in 2007. And starting in September of 2007, that particular department and university started using that solution for their distance education. And since then, pretty well every department at the university is using it for that purpose. So it's continued to get a lot of use at the university. In March of the next year, 2008, being a university, they do like to spin out companies and projects. So they released their code under the lesser GPL license. They renamed it to Big Blue Button. And at the same time, they spun out a support company. The name of that company is Blindside Networks, and Fred Dixon, the committer who's on with us today, he's actually the CEO of that company. Big Blue Button is now available in 17 languages. We'll take a quick look at some of the translation features when we look at the demo. The department head that I talked to says he knows personally of 20 companies in Ottawa that use it as their solution, and there are many companies and universities across the globe that are using it. Currently, there are 39 active committers and over 150 members on the development list. Big Blue Button is comprised of existing open source projects, and we have the list there, there's 14 of them. So ActiveMQ, Asterisk, Asterisk Java, Flex, GhostStrip, gRails, ImageMagick, MySQL, Nginx for the web server, OpenOffice to do conversion of presentations, Red5 provides a Flash server, SWF tools for dealing with Flash, Tomcat, and the XEmbler Java library. Some of the features. So when we're looking at Big Blue Button, what you really have is the server component. So that server component can be installed natively on a Linux system. As of last month, we now have a free BSD port for a BSD system, and I'm hoping that we will also get it into package source and possibly an OpenBSD port as well. If you're not running a Linux or BSD system, any system that can run the VMware player can become your Big Blue Button server, because there are VMware images. once you have the server, the client can be anything as long as it has a web browser that is Flash enabled, because you do need Flash.
Just needs Flash.
So you don't have to download any client software to use it.
Java, JavaScript.
As far as I know, it's just Flash. Some of the features you get, you can upload and share presentations. So that's what we're doing right now. It supports PDF and PowerPoint. There is a shared whiteboard. There's live chat. It starts out with public, whoever's logged in, and you can start private chat rooms. And you can also share your desktop. You can connect through a browser like we've done today, and you, if you have a telephone number, you can also come in through Voice over IP. That's how they do it at Carlton.
Can you do multi-person chat, like video chat?
Yes.
So you can see multiple video feeds at once?
Yes.
Wow. Is it jumping ahead to add bandwidth requirements?
Fred will probably better be able to handle that. Yeah, there's Lars.
So, I mean, so a client can be on, you know, a DSL or cable, but when it comes to the server,
yeah,
is it something you need, you know, 10 meg?
Obviously, the more connections you have, the better bandwidth you're going to need.
Are you sharing user connections? Like, so are you doing like some type of I think Flash server will allow you to do like UDP, so basically guesses.
Let's see if Fred knows the answer to that one.
Hey, Drew, I can answer a question. Time to watch.
Okay. Can you ask the question again? We'll make sure Fred uses it.
So are users, other than uploading their videos, are they like sharing? Are they simply uploading a stream from other people? So they're kind of like a P2P or P2P connection? Is it over UDP or not?
Is the connection over UDP and are users sharing sort of the bandwidth?
With the video chatting.
With the video chatting.
Okay, so the connection is over TCP/IP. So the connection from Flash to the OpenAI server, which is what we're using, is an open source Flash media server. It's TCP/IP, and you don't share your bandwidth, so there's no peer-to-peer.
So you need a lot.
Fred, can you give an idea of how many concurrent users you guys have supported and what sort of pipe it was over? We lost audio.
You muted me.
Okay.
We don't give numbers depending on how many concurrent users, because it's so dependent upon the server, the bandwidth, and what users are streaming. We did a stress test a while back where we had up to 193 concurrent users. Though we recommended under 25 users or less in a single session. And in terms of some of the bandwidth, an audio panel takes about 40 kilobytes a second. The video takes about 40 kilobytes a second. The desktop sharing is probably the most intensive one, especially for the presenter pushing stuff up. But if you're just sharing slides and listening to an audio channel, maybe there's one broadcaster, you should be able to get up to a fair number of users. But again, we just tell people use it for 25 or less in a single room, but we know it goes more, so we're really takes it low and please people when they try to hire a number.
Does it encode the video in H.263? No, it's doing just the Flash support, right?
It is video in
H.263. That one's actually your video stream from like a webcam.
So video right now is we use our Flash provider as a box. So it's the Sorensen encoding. It's basically like 120 by 160. It's not great, but it actually works. I kind of think that in the early days of YouTube where it was pretty great to begin with, we're really watching to see whether Adobe comes out with full support for VP8, because if they do,
So do you do noise canceling? Do you have any noise canceling built in, or do you just rely on Adobe? Like echo canceling or something?
So there's no noise canceling. We could use Adobe, right? They do a really good job of flash on my Linux and PC, but they could not provide automatic echo cancellation in the client.
Yeah.
If you use Adobe Connect, it'll actually download the automatic echo cancellation code to your client. But as the open source project, we don't have access to it. So, but we do use FreeSwitch and Asterisk as a back-end voice conference server. So if you set up on direct numbers, using a SIP trunking provider, you'll get echo cancellation on that. But your flash client, you need to use a headset, which is what I'm using. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Fred. Some of the other features that you can expect in this type of program, as you can see, we can see here other participants through video. You can see the presenter's cursor, which usually shows up as a red button right there. The moderator can mute or eject users. The presenter can share their desktop, and anybody can be made a presenter. And if you're a presenter, that means you can upload presentation and start showing off slides. Some of the features, one feature that they're really looking forward to is the ability to support recording sessions and playback. That is something that's supposed to come out in 0.8, and right now we're in 0.71. So probably a couple of months away from that. Some of the exciting stuff about Big Blue Button is it's starting to be integrated into other open source projects. And because it did start in an educational environment, for example, it can be integrated into your Moodle installation. Works with Drupal, Sakai, TikiWiki, and a whole bunch of other things. Matterhorn is also working on its integration, and I've left the link there, and I'll have the link to the presentation if you want to look at that later. Installation. The port has only been around since about mid-January. As far as I know, I was the first person to get it to work on FreeBSD and to document it, but I did not make the port. Somebody in the Ukraine made the port from my instructions, and it managed to be uploaded before the port's freeze went off. Having installed the port, there's a couple of little typos and little issues that should be fixed in the next version of the port, and I'm hoping that happens in the next week or so. The instructions for installing using the port are at that URL. And I'll be updating those instructions as the port improves. I'm hoping at some point we actually get a package. There hasn't been a package built yet. I plan on making the PBI for PCBSD systems, and I'm hoping that it also gets in the package source.
Does it install on FreeBSD 7?
That's an interesting one. So George is smiling because he actually set me up a 7 jail for the demo. And the 7 port hadn't been made yet, so I actually downloaded the 8 port source and built it in the build file. That was an experiment I hadn't tried before and wasn't sure if it would work.
Yeah.
Speaking of 7, I noticed you use Tomcat. Do you know if you're using Tomcat 7? Because you're going to look at that.
Currently, the port is using Tomcat 6, but if it's Tomcat 7 is already installed, I'm assuming you'll just see Tomcat's installed.
Yeah.
Is somebody going to make like a VMware image and upload it to VMware?
Currently, there are VMware images, and you can get them directly at the BigBlueButton.org site.
Is there one for previous year?
But if anybody does do that, let us know. We'll make sure that gets added to the BigBlueButton site. I certainly want to make sure that their site knows that there is a BSD user base and that if their product works on BSD. I'm just going to go through the rest of the slides, so before we go into the demo. So different ways that you can help, definitely try it out and see what luck you have with it. And I'm definitely curious to have people let me know if there are better ways that we can tune it. We want more information on scalability, bandwidth stuff, so that people can actually go out there and start using it. Yep, you got a question, George?
No, I just trying to see.
Who's tracking all of these integrated components and all of their associated security vulnerabilities?
Well, we know how we do that via C-Systems. I don't know what Fred is doing with his. Fred, what sort of stuff happens with security vulnerabilities for the underlying components?
So the question was, right now, with the Big Button project, we make no representation that this is secure. We know from past experience that if you say something is secure and then someone calls you out on it, it just looks like you don't know what you're doing. So we are not trying to build a secure web conferencing system with Big Button. We know some of the areas that we can work on making it more secure. The API does require security salt, which is hashed with all the API requests. After that salt, the checksum provided. So, if you have a Big Blue Button server running, you will not be able to make API requests to it unless you know the security salt. But then that leads, you know, the next ones are, well, are the communications secure, and is the server secure, and all this stuff. And now, at this point, we make no effort to make either the communications secure or the server secure.
That makes me think of the question, Fred. Is there a way to get the Nginx to do it over SSL, and are there instructions for that?
So we could do that, but there's actually, we're looking at using like a Red 5 protocol RTMP, I can't remember the appropriate acronym for it, but you can actually do the Red 5 over secure socket layers, the RTMP protocol. But I don't know the proper acronym, and you know, we kind of have an idea how to do it, but we haven't tried doing it yet.
Okay. So we have a lot of security conscious people in this room, and they may be giving you feedback back.
Dave, you guys can help make it more secure. You're my new BFF.
So that's something we can add to that, how you can help list. If you're looking for additional resources, so Big Blue Button is at bigbluebutton.org. Blindside Networks provides support, and again, the instructions for installing. You had a question?
To what extent could this be used as a substitute for Microsoft Live Meeting?
So we do not live in a Microsoft world. I have no idea that. Our goal is to provide Big Blue Button to universities and colleges for distance education. So I know we are displacing some of the incumbents, but we have no visibility into what's on the Microsoft side.
Any idea how it compares to WebEx?
So I think once we get a recording play back in place, we'll be kind of like checklist compared. Compatible, but right now, you know, I'd say that would be the biggest thing people would say if you can't record such a Big Blue Button. Our competitor isn't really WebEx. There are other conferencing systems for the distance education market like Illuminate and Wimba or Adobe Connect Pro, all good products, but none of them are open source.
What about Blackboard?
Yes, well, Blackboard actually bought out Wimba and Illuminate, which actually helps us because there's two types of Blackboard customers. One are currently customers and one that are no longer Blackboard customers. And people who are no longer Blackboard customers, most of them have gone to Moodle or Sakai. And they have used Wimba or Illuminate for their virtual classrooms. So once Blackboard bought out Wimba and Illuminate, they found themselves back as Blackboard customers again, which happy. So we're trying to build up Big Blue Button to the point where it could be a viable option for them, for university or college to use it for their distance education program.
Will that be when Blackboard buys you?
That will never happen. God lost for its purpose of MySQL, but I think the world lost something when MySQL got bought out by Oracle, and I never want to see happen. We're going to set up an independent foundation for people, but all the code and the copyright will go to that foundation, so it will be never possible for someone to buy it.
Any other questions?
What are the plans for document sharing?
So that kind of touches on the question of collaborative editing. And one of the theories of BigBlueButton is if we can't do something, we try not to do it at all. So another related question is co-browsing, which is very problematic if you go to secure sites. So we're not going to try to do any collaborative real-time editing documents other than probably create a shared notes module that uses the representational state transformation. Basically, we had, so we'll probably do with just a plain text and call it a shared notes area. And if you want to go beyond that, just, you know, use BigBlueButton for the real-time part and open up another web browser and go into Google Docs. It does a really good job at it.
Yep.
I noticed that you have Asterisk support. Does that mean you can dial into BigBlueButton and not hear the conference?
Absolutely. So if you go to our demo server at demo.bigbluebutton.org, anytime you'll see there's a dial-in number with an extension. So you can dial into the same voice conference bridge that's coming through right now through the voice over IP with our headsets.
No one to dial in, you need asterisk.
If the question is, if you don't plan on supporting dial-ins, do you still need asterisk?
So we use asterisks from day one, and then we recently supported free switch. So we have no interest right now in trying to pursue alternative voice conference systems. We think that the downside of using free switch or asterisk are paid by the upside, which is the flexibility. That's what we start thinking right now.
But I think the question is more from the end, if you don't think you need that component, you have to install it to use BigBlueButton.
Or if you want to do the big voice conferencing, yes.
So it's being used right now.
Yeah, right now Asterisk is running.
Our audio is being mixed by FreeSwitch actually right now.
Yep.
If we want to have multiple virtual classrooms at the same time, so basically we will have different URLs login or how do you have?
So the question is, how do you actually have multiple virtual classrooms simultaneously?
So everything that happens in the BigBlueButton is through the eye. So you can have multiple virtual simultaneously on the BigBlueButton server. If you use the WordPress or the Moodle plugin, it presents you with a link which comes into an environment like this, and there could be three or whatever other virtual classrooms running right now. And you are segmented or sandboxed for each one of them.
And is it possible to do it as standalone, or do you have to be integrated with something that supports it?
Oh, you can do it standalone. If you look at our FAQ, it shows how to on one of the API examples to just create a standalone landing page where you can define some virtual classrooms.
Okay. Also, here it seems like when we have the conference, we don't need to wear the headset. Because I know Illuminate, you have to wear a headset, otherwise there will be an echo.
Okay.
So, that's good.
Okay. Good.
So, it was
the same thing with us. If you had set a little echo, unless you use a dial-in number.
So, BBB is the glue of a lot of different systems. Is this flash application developed by specifically for this project, or is that for another project as well?
So, your flash modules, were they created by you or not?
True. Yes, so the flash modules, everything you see in the UI, basically your own. We didn't use the Winden library, I think it's FlexLib, but it's based on Flash 3.5.1. So we basically created all the logic inside
as part of the API, it's really a way of kind of authenticating the users and putting that one time use link so that not anybody can get in to the project.
Did you hear that one, Chris? Yeah, is there a way to authenticate users, maybe give them a one-time login, or to have only certain people be able to connect?
So all of that authentication, permission, when a room to schedule start, we push that off to a third-party application. So third-party application like WordPress, Joomla, Moodle, it can decide the logic, the business logic under which a user joins. What they're on the server right now is stateless. You could, after those meetings are over, the information is gone. Looking at user over the years, this can be done on a third-party app. For example, if you have permissions to join this class in Moodle, and it's the responsibility of a third-party application to decide when to create the room and when to allow a user to join.
And so somebody can get in, cut and paste the URL, it's shared to somebody else, and there's actually no way of blocking that,
you
know?
Yeah. Any other questions?
Yep, at the end of the day, you're going to get a URL back with, it's going to let you join the web session. And there's ways to make them more secure, but no, you could, you intercept the network traffic, you could copy that URL, with the sun, they too could join. Now, it's joined as your name, right? But you can do it if you want to do it today.
Let's take a look at a quick demo of some of the features. So we've seen the audio and the video, the presentations. I'm just going to show how I uploaded a presentation. So if you take a look over here, I'm just going to minimize these. These are all the people who are currently in on the session. And right now it shows that I'm acting as a presenter. And only a presenter can upload a presentation. Fred, do you want to make yourself a presenter?
Sure.
Okay, so he just clicked on the presenter button and it now shows he's the presenter, which means I no longer have the option to upload a presentation and he can write all over my slides. So we can see where the presenter is. Now I can also choose to be a presenter, because I don't like what Fred is doing. Yeah.
Is there any access control on that?
Any way to control that, Fred, or is it first come, first serve?
Only the moderator can make another person presenter. So if you only have one moderator in a class, such as a team, the students have no control unless the moderator makes a presenter. There can only be one presenter at a time, but there can be multiple moderators.
And how does someone become a moderator?
Copy URL.
So it's up to the third-party application. When it creates a URL for the user, it will create a URL either that has a moderator privileges or the viewer privileges. So, for example, when you came here and logged into the demo page, everybody just goes in as a moderator. I'm a classroom, there will only be one moderator.
If we take a look at the chat here, so by default, when you log in, you are in the all, and you can add a chat, and maybe I'll throw Lars into a chat. So we just now have a private conversation. One of the things that is interesting is the auto-translation feature. So if I select my language as Greek and say something to Lars, so my language is English, but if Lars says something back to me, it should be in Greek. Say something else, Lars. out. So he actually typed it in English, and I'm dealing it in Greek, which can be quite handy if you have people from around the world asking questions. And I believe there's 17 different languages that are supported.
That's usually Google Translate API.
How which API is doing that, Fred?
Yeah, okay, so Google Translate. We had two Google Summer poster students working with us, and one of them did integrate Google Translate.
Any other features you want to show off that I missed, Fred?
The other one is the desktop sharing, which is going to be using the Java applet, so I can show it on here. And I'm going to just start off my desktop sharing session on my computer. I'll choose an area to share. So you should see a window on your screen. You can say click show originalize and you'll see it.
Start.
Okay,
let's see what's
going on. And I'm pushing up a lot through my bandwidth now, so my line might start to go.
That's just some more friendly language.
Yeah. So that one is definitely the most bandwidth intensive.
Yeah, it's a lot that we get a lot of feedback on because people have expectations of instantaneous and bearing. And I'm choosing server in DLL, so hook into the Windows Mirror driver level, or we build in VNC or something. What we're doing right now is we're doing the check pattern from the screen, taking successful screenshots, uploading those screenshots, uploading the change tiles and compressing them using the Adobe Green codec. So it's going to be reasonable, but it will not be what a commercial product does. And to be honest, a lot of the commercial products like Webinar, Placeware, GoToMeeting, their biggest value is their fast screen pairing. So we recommend if you're going to do a presentation, just upload it. Once it's downloaded to your computers, it's pretty quick to update the slides. We do have a desktop share in here if you absolutely need it.
Okay. Is there any, so you're already integrating Google Translate APIs, any work or thoughts on integrating other APIs, or other tools, or by name, which is maybe your desktop sharing, like Skype or something like that, or is possible?
Any thoughts on integrating other APIs, like log me in or Skype?
Google Docs.
Google Docs. I think was integration of other tools.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think the challenge for us is to try not to try to do too much. If you think of what goes on in collaboration, there's a before part, a during part, and an after part. Before is usually like things that go up before the meeting happens, scheduling, who gets into me, and so on. The during the meeting, which is the real-time part, and the after part is maybe the minutes or so on. If we realize that we just focus on making it a little bit really simple and try to do the core capabilities like web camera, slides, chat, audio, desktop sharing, shared notes, and then evolve into a form where other people can add or remove their own modules, then we're probably doing the right things. At least the feedback we've gotten so far is that the teacher just selected their class, upload his or her slides, and just start going. You know, they all the collaborative editing that, no, we're probably not going down that route.
No,
at least not with the core platform.
Is the architecture modular that people can add their own modules?
We're working towards that, and I apologize. I have another call which I have to jump to for probably about 15 minutes, so Drew, I'm going to come back.
Okay, thanks for your time, Paul. Okay, thanks. Yes.
I'm slightly off the topic, but I think it's essentially a related question.
So this uses Flash, and I know the iPads, which are all the rage, don't have good Flash support. So what do you guys think about, you know, what the solution is for that?
And that one would definitely be a great question. Did you have one, Jim?
I can't remember.
I'm just wondering, is there any cooling function, like the professor can ask the students some questions, like, so give them a try, like a check mark and the, like yes, no type of, so students can be involved.
As far as I know, that depends upon what you're integrating with. So for example, if you're using it with Moodle, you'll get all of your Moodle functionality. Yeah?
Can you download the presentation from directly from the Moodle button in the presentation? You can download the PPT or
That I don't know. Yeah.
You know, the chat, is that XMPP based or
not? Okay. So basically, I just wanted to give everybody sort of an overview, let you know that this exists and it's out there. There is a fairly vibrant community around BigBlueButton, and they do have forums and IRC and mailing lists and wikis, and their documentation is getting there. So that's always something that people can ask. Thanks everyone for your time. Thank you.